This is The Pieces That Remain, written by Nanashi07 and read by Mistborn Hero. This is a Moon Knight fanfic rated for teen and up audiences and featuring the characters Steve Grant, Mark Spector, Layla. It is tagged for character study, moving on. Emotional heart comfort. It is Mark who falls flat on his face when the cord around their ankle pulls taut. But it is Steven who sits up and, with practiced hands, unlocks the cuff. He feels, after everything he's been through, that his flat should look different. A changed landscape. But it isn't. His stacks of books, organized in their own haphazard way, are untouched. The bags of sand, the postcards, the memorabilia from the museum are all in their rightful places. When Steven runs a finger through the surface of his desk, it comes away clean. No dust. They haven't been gone that long. It feels like a lifetime. He bends to look into the fish tank. Two twin goldfish look back at him expectantly, waiting for their breakfast, their mouths opening and closing. "Where did you come from?" he asks them. Mark is frowning in the reflection of the tank.
"Maybe a last gift from Khonshu?" he suggests, but he doesn't sound convinced as he says it. Steven puts his finger on the cool glass gently. Both of the fish come up to it and try to nibble on it. He doesn't recognize either of them as the fish that replaced Gus. They seem to both be new, but he can't be sure. He misses Gus, his strange little companion. He remembers the first time he woke up to see Gus gone and an imposter in his place. "You replaced Gus," Steven says. Mark grimaces, his gaze sliding away. He says, "I'm sorry about that." But Steven gets it now, kind of. After the gunshot, after their time together in the afterlife, after everything, he's got the shape of Mark now. "You were trying to protect me," Steven says. "You know, sort of, in your own strange little way." Mark's gaze is flat. "I meant, I'm sorry that your fish died. I think I overfed him." Steven straightens and pinches some of the flakes into the tank. He could admit now how much it upset him that Gus is dead, but he doesn't need Mark entering another guilt spiral. "How about we let me be in charge of all animal husbandry from now on, yeah?" Mark takes over to get them showered and changed, and Steven makes them a paltry lunch of oatmeal and dried fruit. He's just started tidying the flat when Mark says, his expression gentle, his tone reluctant, "Steven, you know we're not going to be able to stay here." "Here?" Steven repeats, placing some of his books back into their places on the shelves. "We need a new place. Harrow's people know you live here. We can't take the risk." Steven takes in the flat, the high ceilings and comfortable wood, all the little knickknacks he's accumulated to fill it and make it feel like home, to feel like an extension of himself. "Yeah, but you can keep us safe, can't you?" if some bad people come calling and that. Stephen checks on Mark's reflection in the bathroom mirror. Mark's fists are clenched. He radiates tension.
I don't have the suit anymore, bud.
Yeah, but isn't that the point of all the working out and the mercenary training and all that? Stephen, with a book still in one hand, mimics some shadowboxing, mostly to make the muscle in Mark's jaw stop twitching like that.
So you can beat up anyone who tries to mess with you. Look badass?
Mark looks away. After a moment, he says, a reluctant admission,
"If we stay here, I'd never be able to relax. I'd always be worried that they were coming for us."
Stephen slips the last book onto the shelf. He lets his hand linger on its well-worn spine before releasing it. He touches the wood of the shelf beside it. Familiar and precious. He loves this flat and he loves Mark, and so he doesn't know what to do.
"This is where Lila knows where to find us."
Stephen tries, his last and the most desperate attempt. Now Mark just looks condescending.
"There are things called phones."
All right," Stephen mutters. Mark watches him as Stephen starts to shuffle things around his desk, pretending he's organizing. He pushes a paperweight to the back of the desk, then places it in the corner instead.
"We can stay in London, though," Mark says. "Yeah, you know. Let's stay in London for a while."
It eases some of the ache in Stephen's chest, and he angles Mark a grateful smile. Mark rents a van and drives them out to the storage locker. He walks the route to his locker like he's walked it a million times before, and Stephen watches with interest as he methodically begins packing everything away. The cot folds up into itself, small and portable, the plastic cases of weapons, of clothes, of documents. Stephen only catches a glimpse of their contents. A snap closed with quick and familiar motions. Mark says nothing as he works, but Stephen can see in the reflections in the metal walls that Mark's brow is furrowed.
"I won't miss this place,"
Stephen tells him, trying to feel the silence, trying to ease the tension on Mark's face. Mark doesn't answer. He is kneeling on the floor, shoving clothes into one of the plastic cases.
"I think our next flat should have a lot of light,"
Stephen says.
"Large windows. Maybe a garden."
"Whatever you want, bud," Mark says, his tone distant.
"We could get a cat,"
Stephen says, almost as a question. That makes Mark look at him, at least, his gaze focusing in on Stephen's reflection in the wall.
"Stephen, I couldn't even help you keep a fish alive, and you want to get a cat?"
Stephen shuffles his weight, pulling a bit at the cuffs of his sweater so that they cover his thumbs.
"Well, yeah," he says. "But that was before, wasn't it? When you were doing all the missions for Khonshu." "But Khonshu's gone. You don't need to travel anymore, do you? You don't need to do anything anymore."
Mark's motions stop abruptly. He stays there, kneeling on the floor, hunched over a case of dark clothes, his gaze going far away. It is a long, tense moment before Mark clears his throat and resumes packing the clothing.
"You're right," he says. "Quiet."
"Yeah." Stephen knows he's said something wrong, but he doesn't know how to fix it. He doesn't know what Mark wants to hear.
"It's a good thing, Mark," he reminds him.
"They worked so hard to be free of Khonshu." Stephen knows that Mark wanted it.
"You don't have to hurt anyone ever again."
"It is a good thing," Mark says. "I'm just..." He snaps the case closed. He takes a breath and leans back, adjusting to the idea. Mark doesn't talk to him much as he loads the van, as he pays off the storage locker and closes the account, as he drives to an electronics store and buys them a new cell under the same phone number as his old burner, the phone number that Layla knows. He unloads the van as the sun is setting, back and forth from the van to the flat, moving box after box after box until the job is done. He returns the van, takes the tube home, and once the door is closed behind them again, he surrenders the body to Stephen and doesn't nudge him for it back. Not for days and days and days. Stephen goes flat hunting, a rather tedious affair that he nonetheless finds kind of thrilling. He's got some vague memories of moving into his current flat, yet he knows he never had to find his own place before. So, this is new, and mundane, and therefore novel. He likes feeling normal, he's realizing, and normal in ways that have not been fabricated for him by Mark. So, he happily visits loads of awful places before Mark insists that they tap into his funds in order to get a safer, more sanitary place.
"I'll be living there too," Mark tells him, "and I'd rather not have you waking me up every 2 minutes shrieking because you saw a rat."
Despite Mark's reluctance to take control of the body, he never stops talking. He gives input into almost everything Stephen does, and even when he has nothing constructive to say, he'll sometimes just talk to fill the silence. A personality quirk that surprises Stephen. Stephen finds that he has no complaints about it. Mark's voice and presence are comforting. Mark helps Stephen figure out how to fill out the rental application for the flat they both like, how to go furniture shopping, reminds him to stop mumbling to himself in public, except he's not really just mumbling to himself now, is he? Mark always responds to him, always reassures him that he's there when Stephen needs the reminder, and Stephen wonders if Mark's newfound chattiness isn't coming from a similar place. The need for comfort, the need to be reminded that he's not alone. Mark had spent most of his life not being able to talk to Stephen and have him respond. After all, the situation is new to him, too. Mark is chatty, but he isn't demanding. He lets Stephen choose their new place, lets Stephen choose the new furniture styles that he likes, lets Stephen make the food that he likes, and dress their body how he wants. Stephen can't help but feel like it is out of character for Mark, who likes control and has more life experience than Stephen, besides. It feels like Mark is being too accommodating when he passes a small bookshop with a "Help Wanted" sign on the window. Mark doesn't protest when Steven walks in and haltingly asks for an application. He sits, quiet in their head during Steven's interview 2 days later, doesn't bother to correct Steven's mistakes or give him hints, just congratulates him when he lands the job.
"It doesn't bother you?"
Steven asks on the way back to their new place.
"Why would it?"
Steven shrugs. He walks another block before he says, "You could get a job too, you know, something you liked, if you want." But Mark doesn't reply.
They are at home, reading, when the new cell rings. Finally, 2 weeks after they had bought it. Steven snatches it up so fast that he pulls the charger from the wall accidentally. He fumbles to accept the call, and when he presses it to his ear, it is Lila's voice.
"Lila!"
Steven exclaims, maybe a bit too loudly, into the phone. He forces himself to calm down, even as he hears Mark echoing the sentiment in his head.
"Calm down, bud."
"It's so good to hear you."
Steven tries again, his voice at a more normal level.
"We were worried."
Steven can hear the smile in her voice when she responds.
"Hello, Steven. I'm sorry I didn't call earlier. It took a while for me to realize where you had gone, and things have been crazy here. Are you okay?"
"We're aces, yeah," Steven says quickly. "Are you in Cairo?"
"Yeah,"
she says, her voice grim.
"There's a lot of cleanup to do, and a lot of people who need help."
"We were worried," Steven says again. He is still new at this, at caring about someone, at trying to convey that care. Mark is quiet, watching. Lila laughs a little.
"Well, that's a new thing to hear. Mark never worried about me. But hey, I've got my own suit now."
"Well, that is kind of what we were worried about," Steven says, thinking about Khonshu, about his demands.
"I can handle it,"
Lila says, unconcerned. And she can. Steven knows she can, but he wishes she were here. Wishes he could see her face and touch her soft hair.
"And you two? No more visits from Khonshu?"
"No," Steven says. "I've got a new job, actually. I'm working at a bookshop."
"Oh,"
Lila says.
"Wow."
Steven hums. "And a new flat. It's nice. Pretty posh, actually. Kind of a sparse, but you know, we're working on it. It has an outdoor area. I was thinking of starting a garden. Maybe you could, I mean, if you wanted, when you're not busy, maybe you could come to see it."
"I will,"
Lila says, her voice warm.
"But I can't right now. The people here, I just can't leave them."
Steven's grip on the phone tightens.
"I understand."
"I can't talk long. Is Mark there, Steven?"
"Yeah," Steven says. He ignores the pang of jealousy, reminds himself that Mark is the one, technically, married to Layla. "He's here. He's listening."
"Can I talk to him?"
she asks. Steven hesitates, feels Mark hesitate too. It's been weeks now since Mark has taken the body, but Stephen doesn't know how to explain that to Layla, thinks it would be a betrayal of Mark's trust to tell her at all. Mark senses Stephen's dilemma, and with something like a sigh, he takes control.
"Hey, Layla," Mark says.
"Hi, Mark,"
she says. She has the same smile in her voice that she had when greeting Stephen, and Stephen resists the urge to swell with pride.
"You sure you're both safe?"
"I got us," Mark says, and doesn't elaborate. He doesn't mention the handgun that he keeps under their pillow, or the knife that he insists Stephen strap to their ankle each morning before leaving the flat.
"Stephen's got a new job, huh?"
she says.
"Are you going to be staying in London for long, then?"
Mark shrugs, though Layla can't see it. "Might as well," he says. Stephen hasn't asked Mark if he misses the States. He's avoided it mostly out of selfishness. Stephen likes London and wants to stay here, and he's afraid that if he asks, Mark will confess to being homesick, and Stephen will have no choice but to let him take them back overseas. But he has a feeling, when Mark is helping him pick out food at the grocery store, when Mark shows a blatant preference for peanut butter and sugary cereals and Oreos and the weird American 90s show, that he misses it.
"And have you got a new job too, then?"
Layla asks. "No," Mark says. He's turned his gaze to watch the twins, the two goldfish, swimming lazily in their tank. "Nah, I'm leaving it up to Stephen to be the breadwinner for a bit. I'm just freeloading." A lie. They are mostly living off Mark's impressive savings. Stephen nudges Mark, chastises him for lying to Layla. Mark dismisses him. "She knows, bud." Layla hesitates for a long time before she asks,
"Are you done with the mercenary work, then? For good?"
The fish are swimming in circles. One of them goes to the bottom and picks up one piece of gravel after another, taste testing it for food. "Yeah," Mark says, his voice a bit strained. His throat must be tight. In their head, Mark thinks, his thought crystal clear in Stephen's mind with its depth of emotion. "I don't know what the fuck I am going to do now." It makes Stephen reel a little. He hadn't known how lost Mark was feeling, hadn't known the strength of it. It is one thing to be in a period of adjustment, it is another to be completely unmoored. He tries to send Mark some vague feeling of comfort, but Mark just swallows and shakes his head. It's like Layla knows, somehow, even across continents, across a phone line.
"It's okay,"
she says, gently.
"It's okay to take some time to figure things out."
Mark's mouth twitches. He looks like he wants to make a joke, but he says nothing for a long time. Finally, he just says, "Yeah."
"I told Stephen I would visit,"
Layla says.
"Maybe in a little while I can come over and we can talk about it. I'm still trying to figure things out too, you know? The avatar. You."
Mark's emotions are unsteady, his thoughts disorganized. Stephen gently steps up, and Mark doesn't fight him. "We could figure it out together, maybe?" Stephen suggests. Layla laughs again, gently.
"Neither of us is very good at figuring things out, Mark and me,"
she says.
"Maybe you'll be better at it than us, Stephen. I look forward to trying.
Now Stephen's chest does swell. Affection and love and admiration. The thing that Mark did right, the best thing that Mark ever did, was bringing Layla into their lives.
Is it too soon to tell her I love her?
He asks Mark.
Yes, Mark replies quickly. Do not say that.
So Stephen says,
All right, lovely aces. Yes, okay.
And Layla promises to call again when she gets a chance. And when she hangs up, it is just Stephen and Mark again. Mark is quiet for the rest of the evening, quiet as he watches Stephen get them ready for bed. No more ankle restraints, no more sand lines. In the moments just before falling asleep, it is the easiest time to fall into their mindscape, fall into the place where they can talk face to face, unseparated by a reflective surface. Mark sits cross-legged at the foot of the bed, shoulders uncharacteristically hunched. He looks tired and guilty.
Is this why you've been letting me control the body for so long?
Stephen asks him gently. He doesn't know how to put it into words, the ache in Mark's chest that had bled through to Stephen. That feeling of being lost, of having no purpose. He scoots forward on the bed a bit, close enough that his knees knock into Mark's.
Mark, he says gently.
What am I supposed to do? Mark asks. I'm only good at one thing. I've only done one thing. Soldier, mercenary, fist of Khonshu, killing, hurting, murdering.
Please don't go back to that, Mark,
Stephen says. He doesn't want to see Mark hurt anyone again. Stephen doesn't want to have to, either.
It was the plan, you know,
Mark says. Remember, I told you, when we were finished with Khonshu, you would never have to see me again.
Stephen grabs his wrist, quickly gripping a little harder than necessary. He can't help it. Mark, don't.
Mark slants him a small smile.
I know, bud. I'm not leaving you. But I didn't have a plan for this. For sticking around. I don't know what to do.
Stephen doesn't release Mark's wrist. Keeps it safely tucked into his grip, where he can feel his pulse, the warmth of his life.
Maybe Layla was right, he says. You don't need to figure it out right away.
Mark looks away again, so Stephen continues.
You are good at things, Mark. You like to help people and protect people. You do. It's why Khonshu chose you, isn't it?
A strong moral compass. That's what Haru said. And I reckon he was right. So maybe you find a way to help people that's not beating them up at the same time, eh? We can, I don't know, volunteer at a shelter or something. What's the program? The one where they build houses for people, yeah? You could do that.
He can picture it shockingly easy. Mark with a construction hut somewhere overseas, helping to raise the wooden frame of a home, the sun hot on his shoulders. The satisfaction of a job well done, of doing something physical, something good. He hopes Mark can see it too, this image he's created for him, this future that they can attain.
Mark must see it, or something similar enough, because he's looking at Stephen with wide eyes, something like wonder in his gaze. He swallows, looks like he's holding back tears, and his voice is gruff when he says,
"You could have quit saving me all the time, bud."
Steven is still holding his wrist, and Mark turns it in his grip so that he can grip Steven's wrist in response. A complimentary hold. Steven grins.
"Nah, that's my job, ain't it?"
He scrunches his nose.
"This hero stuff is easy. I don't know why you were complaining all the time."
It finally makes Mark crack a smile, his mouth barely twitching, but Steven counts it as a victory. When they wake, Steven realizes that he's slept through his alarm. He checks his phone. 3 missed calls from his boss at the bookshop. They had gone to sleep on a Thursday. The phone screen informs him that it is a Saturday.
"Mark?" Steven says.
"Yeah," Mark says, resigned and tense.
"I see it."
The end. Thank you for listening. This has been recorded for KD Heart for ITPE 2022. I hope you enjoyed. Thank you for listening.